It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and this is Maine Things Considered. Ahead on the program tonight, the woman allegedly abducted by multiple shooting and murder suspect Anthony Lord last week says the Maine State Police should take some of the blame for what happened. And we'll look at Maine's possible trade future with Cuba. We'll have those stories in a moment. First, this news. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. Fishermen and hunters across the country, and especially in the Northeast, are strongly in favor of recently revised clean water rules. That's according to a new national survey. Tom Porter has more.
2 months ago, the EPA finalized a provision of the Clean Water Act, extending its protections to the smaller streams and wetlands that form the foundation of the nation's water resources. The National Wildlife Federation polled 1,000 registered voters across the political spectrum who identify as hunters and anglers. 83% of them supported the revised act. In the Northeast, that figure was 86%. Judy Burke is with the Natural Resources Council of Maine.
We want to obviously ensure that Maine's congressional delegation is aware of the strong support of sportsmen, particularly for this rule and for making sure the habitat is protected.
Not everyone's a fan of the new rule, however. Last month, 16 states, most of them in the western U.S., filed suit to try and block the measure, arguing it gives the federal government too much power. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
And 12 of 14 municipalities in Androscoggin County have filed a lawsuit in Superior Court. They say county commissioners improperly set their own salaries, benefits, and the county budget. As Patty White reports, the municipalities are asking the commissioners to return all the salaries and benefits that weren't approved by the budget committee.
According to the complaint, state lawmakers approved a change to the Androscoggin County Charter in the last legislative session that transferred budget authority from the budget committee, which is comprised of citizens and municipal officials, to the commissioners. Despite that change, the attorney representing the municipalities, Peter Bran, says state law still requires a finance committee to approve the budget.
A finance committee should have oversight in the sense, you know, it's you wouldn't allow your kids to set their own allowance and then just send you the bill.
The lawsuit contends that municipalities provide approximately 80% of Androscoggin County's budget. The chair of the Androscoggin County Commissioners, Beth Bell, says the commissioners will review the lawsuit with legal counsel. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
In weather tonight, clearing skies everywhere but in the northern parts of the state and the mountains. Low temperatures tonight in the 50s. Tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds in the south, mostly cloudy in the north with some afternoon showers statewide and highs in the mid-60s to high 70s. You are listening to MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. The woman allegedly abducted by murder suspect Anthony Lord last week as he went on a rampage that left two men dead says the Maine State Police are partially to blame for what happened. 21-year-old Brittany Irish went before reporters' cameras today to explain what she says was the motive for his crimes. Jennifer Mitchell has details.
Speaking in front of the charred ruins of her parents' barn in Benedicta Township, Brittany Irish says the whole string of events began on Tuesday, July 14th, when 35-year-old Anthony Lord allegedly brought her to a remote cabin in Aroostook County, strangled her with a seatbelt, and raped her. She says she was able to convince Lord to let her go the next day by promising she would not go to police. After seeking treatment at a hospital in Bangor, Irish says she was directed by Bangor PD to go to the Maine State Police, where she says she filed a complaint. From there, Irish says things took a turn.
And that's when they had decided to give him a phone call and let him know that a case was reported. And 2 hours later, my mom's barn is burning down.
That was the night of the 16th. Irish says she suspected that Lord was behind the barn burning. She says that she and boyfriend, 22-year-old Kyle Hewitt, then went to her parents' home to see that her mother was all right. But she says they didn't feel safe.
I had asked the state police 3 times to make sure someone was here with us. And they didn't do this. This all could have been avoided if they had left a state trooper at this house. And they didn't want to do that because supposedly they didn't have the manpower.
Hours later, she says Lord was shooting his way into the home where a bullet grazed her arm. Hewitt was killed and her mother shot and wounded. What followed was a trail of destruction that spanned across three towns and would leave another man dead before ending the next day in Holton. According to Irish, she met Lord just over 4 years ago through a friend. At the time, she says she was not aware of Lord's criminal history, which includes sex offenses. When she learned about those, she says she took out a protection order against him in 2011. Irish's parents previously told the Associated Press that Lord had been obsessed with Irish for years. In the same interview, the couple said that Irish and Lord had renewed their acquaintance this year following the death of Lord's six-month-old son, a case that's currently under investigation, and following a miscarriage for Irish. Calls to the Bangor Police Department were not returned by airtime. In a statement, Maine State Police acknowledged that troopers were investigating Irish's allegations of sexual assault last week and that, quote, "In the aftermath of many major incidents, state police typically conduct a review of our response, and we will do so in this case," end quote. The statement goes on to say that further details are not possible because the entire matter is now part of the Attorney General's homicide investigation. Tim Feely with the Maine AG's office declined to comment. For MPBN News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
Today marks the second anniversary of the disappearance of a Tennessee woman on the Appalachian Trail. Geraldine Largay was last seen when she left Reddington Township for an 8-mile hike to Mount Abram Township. The 66-year-old hiker, whose trail name was Inchworm, was supposed to meet her husband the following day. She never made it. Joining me now with the latest on the case is John McDonald of the Maine Warden Service. Tell me what you know about what happened to Geraldine Largay 2 years ago.
The Maine Warden Service, 2 years ago, began a search. What at that time was a large-scale search for Geraldine Largay. She was due to meet her husband in Wyman Township at the Appalachian Trail Route 27 crossing, and she never arrived at that location. It's a very remote, rugged section of the Appalachian Trail, and quite frankly, we have not found any attributable evidence whatsoever of her other than a photograph that was taken of her on July 22nd at the Poplar Ridge Lean-To, which we've distributed for people to see.
So where, then, is this investigation now? What are the next steps?
We continue to field tips and calls from people still today. You know, we do occasionally put resources into search areas up in that area for her specifically. In, you know, the higher, what we feel the higher probability areas. But we certainly are not searching there every day like we were. But when weather and resources permit, we do still put some effort into trying to locate Geraldine.
One thing that I'm sort of wondering with this, most people now, of course, have cell phones with GPS devices in them, and they're pretty easy to track on those. So what happened to Geraldine Largay's phone? When did she last make a call before she disappeared, and where was she when the phone went dead?
Well, some of that we don't know. We do know that she provided a text that her husband read, and I believe it was on the Sunday that she was last seen. And cell coverage up in that area is very, very spotty. There are places when you can get out with a signal and places that you can't. You know, we've incorporated some technology to try to help pinpoint when she could have made, you know, some of her last contact with a phone in that area. But, of course, we don't know when it went dead or exactly where she was because she didn't have a GPS phone. We feel we've been looking in the right areas, but obviously have not found her yet.
John McDonald of the Maine Warden Service, thanks so much.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.
A $25,000 reward is still available for information on this case. People who think they might know something, no matter how irrelevant it might seem, should call the Maine Warden Service at 207-624-7076. Meanwhile, the LePage administration is describing a record drop in overall crime in Maine as nothing short of a phenomenon. Public Safety Commissioner John Morris also says the 25% decline over the last 2 years can be attributed in part to the state's aging population and to a successful drug take-back program. But Morris says drug arrests are surging in Maine and that he's not predicting a reduction in drug trafficking anytime soon. A.J. Higgins has more.
Morris says the Uniform Crime Reporting Statistics for 2014 show that crime dropped nearly 15% the largest decline in the four decades that Maine has kept detailed records.
Maine continues to be one of the safest, if not the safest, state in the union based on these figures.
The news about Maine's crime ranking coincides with a spate of armed robberies in Portland, a one-man crime spree in Aroostook County, and a manhunt for a suspected murderer that is now in its second month. While Morris could not comment on the recent criminal events, he does believe that much of the major crime Maine experiences is linked to a single source, out-of-state drug trafficking.
If your listeners read the paper and they look at the mugshots in any paper of MDEA arrests, if they look at where these people are from, they're going to see out-of-state, Brooklyn, Bronx, Lowell, New Bedford, Philadelphia. I mean, everybody should be observing that, so you can form your own opinions. What is happening, out-of-state gangs are taking over drug trafficking in Maine.
In his weekly radio message, Governor Paul LePage focused on the threat posed by drug traffickers, and he also found someone to blame.
Democrats have given up on getting drugs off our streets. Their solution is simply ignore the problem. To be successful fighting Maine's drug problem, we must have a plan. We need to fund more agents at the Maine Drug Enforcement Agency.
LePage says the state would be in a better position to fight drug traffickers if Democrats had not rejected his bill that would have funded seven more MDEA agents. But Democrats like Senator Stan Grzowski of Brunswick, who serves on the legislature's Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee, say they are offended by the governor's partisan accusation.
The governor talks about headlines, and the governor talks about more law enforcement. Well, he has over 2,000 law enforcement that can arrest anybody for dealing drugs or even using drugs. I don't think his argument holds much water when he doesn't put the resources behind it.
Commissioner Morris disputes Grzowski's assessment, saying there are big differences between the mission of an MDEA agent and the average law enforcement officer in Maine. According to the report, aggravated assaults dropped by more than 4% last year, domestic violence assaults were down by nearly 8%, and burglaries decreased by more than 22%. Overall crime rates dropped by double digits in both rural and urban areas of Maine. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
And finally today, members of Maine's congressional delegation are looking to Cuba as a potential trade partner with the state. Both Republican Senator Susan Collins and Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree say Maine businesses should take advantage of the recent thaw in U.S.-Cuban relations to rebuild what was once a robust trade relationship with the island nation. Mel Leary has more.
In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, Maine had a booming trade with Cuba. Maine shipped ice harvested from its rivers and lumber from its forests to the growing country. Cuba shipped some fruit, but mostly sugar, to be used in Maine refineries to make rum and other liquor. All trade with Cuba ended with the revolution led by Fidel Castro in 1959, and only slowly has returned in recent years. First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, a former state legislator, went on a trade trip with several state officials to Cuba in 2005. She says the rules in place then were too restrictive for developing trade.
Some of the systems that were set up requiring cash in advance and very complicated trade rules, you know, really didn't make it happen. And we're seeing a huge change going on right now with this administration very favorable to opening up relations with Cuba.
Pingree says Maine should take advantage of the need Cuba has to import most of its food. She says historically there were a lot of food exports to Cuba from Maine, including cattle. She says food and other agricultural products could provide huge trade opportunities for the state.
It could be a huge advantage for Maine and for really our whole country, because Cuba buys a lot of its food right now from Vietnam, from other countries, and, you know, we could be their supplier. We're so close.
Maine Senator Susan Collins shares Pingree's optimism about potential economic opportunities. She was in Cuba last month and met with several top Cuban officials, including First Vice President Miguel Diaz-Canel. Collins says some of the conversations were about lifting travel restrictions on Americans traveling to Cuba, but trade was also on the agenda.
I'd read an article that there's a shortage of potatoes in Cuba. And I said, this is a problem I can solve for you, Mr. Vice President. I also talked to them about the possibility of importing blueberries, which I think would be very popular in Cuba.
Collins agrees with Pingree that food exports to Cuba could be a boost to Maine's economy, and at the same time help the Cubans with their longtime problems of food shortages.
I would love for the state of Maine to help solve the problem of food insecurity in Cuba.
Both lawmakers say there are several bills pending in both the House and Senate that are aimed at normalizing the relationship between the two countries and restoring trade. One of those measures is co-sponsored by Maine Senator Angus King. His legislation would lift the trade embargo, allow U.S. financial institutions to extend credit to Cuban enterprises, and allows the private sector to create trade promotion and marketing programs aimed at the Cuban market. The legislation has yet to have a public hearing. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
And at 12 minutes before 6, it's time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
Our brightest day of the week is drawing to a close as clouds retreat to the mountains in the county tonight. Starlit skies with valley fog late throughout the remainder of Maine. Very comfortable 50s. Tomorrow, clouds will rapidly redevelop over all but southernmost counties, where some sunshine will hold the fort through the afternoon. Afternoon showers likely across the mountain central and northern sections with isolated sprinkles down east and over the western hills. Mid-60s north, upper 70s south. Friday will be mostly cloudy statewide with showers and isolated afternoon thunder, mid-60s north, mid-70s south. Saturday will be the select day of the weekend with morning sunshine statewide, some increase in afternoon cloudiness, brightest along the coast, and there's a slight risk of showers over the mountains. Clouds will regroup over Maine Sunday with coastal fog a possibility, afternoon showers likely. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to John Bradford, Barbara Caridi, and Ed Morin. I'm Nora Flaherty.